This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to WRFL Lexington. It's 4 o'clock, and you're listening to Green Talks, where we explore the people and projects that are using the environmental stewardship fee to promote sustainability in the UK community. I'm your host, Lauren Thomas, and I'm the current Director of Outreach for the Student Sustainability Council. The funding for the projects featured on our show comes from the environmental stewardship fee, a $4 fee that every UK student pays along with tuition each semester. The ESF, which is expected to generate approximately $190,000 by the end of each school year, is distributed by the Student Sustainability Council, hereafter the SSC, for various projects that enhance the culture of sustainability here at the University of Kentucky. This week, I am joined by Megan Seifert. She is a PhD candidate here at UK, and Drew Hardy, who is also a UK student, here to talk about a sustainability project that's being instituted at elementary schools here in Lexington. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So can you guys give me a general overview about what the Sustainability and Garden Science Project is?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you a start. It is, first of all, this is the third year that we've implemented the program, and it's a science-based curriculum, particularly plant science-based curriculum, that tries to give a very sort of hands-on approach to teaching second graders about garden science and plant biology, integrating it with concepts of sustainability, so drawing a parallel between plant biology, plant form and function, and a plant actually as a sustainable system individually and at a population and species level. We're not using those words to second graders, but, you know, that's the concept of the curriculum. But it is also a research project, so we're actually trying to collect data to see if our approach actually works, and then sort of spread that message through through workshops and through publication. And then another aspect of the project is really involving a lot of different parties in the process, both undergraduate students, teachers, researchers, and the second graders themselves in this case. So that's kind of an overview of the different parts of pieces and what it is.
Awesome. So what are each of your individual roles within the project?
So my role in the project is to lead different parts of the lesson plan for each visit that we make to the elementary schools. And so I'm able to connect with and educate these students about these basic science topics that we previously mentioned and kind of engage them in their learning.
Yeah, and I'm a project manager and sort of a co-PI from the research side. So I help kind of adapt the curriculum based on school-specific needs and classroom needs. So I help liaise between the students, the UK students, and our education consultant and the teachers themselves. So sort of making all these moving parts come together and getting everyone in place and on the same page.
Awesome. So what are the sort of logistics behind the operation? What's your team size like? Where are you working? Sort of that component.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the school that you're working with?
And sure. Yeah. So I'm working with a school called Cardinal Valley Elementary here in Lexington. And we have about 8 to 10 undergraduates in our whole team, but we split that up in between two different elementary schools. Mm-hmm. So I think we've got 4 or 5 undergraduates that routinely go to these schools. And most of them are all UK undergraduate students. I think we have a few graduate students that we're working with, as well as a few teachers and professors that come with us as well. But it's a relatively small team that we work with.
So is this an after-school program? Is this something that's implemented into their learning curriculum?
It is. It's during their school day. So it's gotcha. It's implemented into their curriculum during
awesome.
The school day.
Yeah.
So just to clarify, so it's not integrated into the school's formal curriculum. Mm-hmm. So I would see that as some sort of institutionalized measure, which is part of our long-term goal at some level, but we're jumping ahead of ourselves. But we work during the normal school hours, although there are some activities like installing the garden beds and sort of in-between things that can happen outside of the actual classroom time as well.
Yeah. So what gaps is your all's curriculum filling within the broader context of what these kids currently learn in school? What's the sort of difference?
Well, that's a big question. So our education person is the person that sort of helped target second grade. Mm-hmm. And as you and maybe others know, our science curriculum is changed. So there's a set of standards that was produced called the Next Generation Science Standards. People call it NGSS for short. And it's being implemented now in Kentucky. And within that curriculum, there are introductory ideas of sustainability introduced as early as kindergarten, and that's really sort of like interdependence of ecosystems. Mm-hmm. You definitely don't get the big word.
Right.
And then there's not really a lot until middle school and high school. So in high school, there's actually a human sustainability subcategory to mm-hmm. earth systems. And so that is in the curriculum. But beside from that, there's this gap between kindergarten and middle school where there isn't a lot of content explicitly about sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a nice way for us to sort of thread that gap a bit where it might be needed and to keep these concepts going and to introduce the word itself. None of the students in the whole of the 3 years that we've done it, have ever known what the word means at the beginning. Some mm-hmm. kids have said it's like a stain, like on your shirt, you know?
Oh my.
And so, I mean, it's, you know, if you haven't interacted with second graders in a while and young kids, you say, well, I probably wouldn't have known that word
absolutely.
Either. But then at the end, they do know it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we try to make it approachable, because mm-hmm. it's a complex topic and subject in general. So it's really just sort of dipping your toe in and drawing some parallels with something that is easier for them to get their head around with plants and garden science.
Awesome. So can you give me an example of the sort of activities that you guys might partake in with the gardens that you guys sort of plant here?
Sure. So we just, at our last session, we've only had one session so far at Cardinal Valley, but mm-hmm. At our last session, we planted many different types of seeds and seedlings and planted those in the soil. And then we have a session tomorrow where we're going to go back and revisit those plants and see how they're doing, see how they've been growing, stuff like that. And it's a really great thing for the kids because they get really excited. They get their own plants and they get to plant those. And we did a lot of plants for every kid, and we split them all up into different trays, and we labeled their individual plants so that they can see how well their plants have been growing, and then make adjustments in the second session there.
That's a really awesome mm-hmm. experience to have as an elementary yeah. schooler. I know that I definitely didn't have access to anything like that, so that's really awesome.
Yeah, the kids have a very good time with it, and they really get ownership of it. I was at Wellington when they were installing their garden beds, and mm-hmm. the teacher told me in between that the students got very possessive about the other kids in the school. Not like, you know, they didn't want them to damage the beds or do mm-hmm. anything near it. And so it's really nice to see them take ownership of it and really get very excited about,
absolutely.
You know, gardening.
Most definitely.
Science.
So what's the sort of history of this project or project? Where did it come from and how has it come to fruition?
It was conceived before I was here, mm-hmm. At least in my position and involved with it. So it was conceived as kind of a collaboration between biologists that work in the UK biology department as well as at the Ecological Research Center mm-hmm. and educators. So the Ecological Research Center is located on the north side of town, and we kind of have a neighbor in the building, which mm-hmm. is from the College of Education and has a long acronym, which is PIMSR, so Partnership Institute for Math and Science for Education Reform. Cool. And they do a lot of teacher training at NGSS standards, how to implement these for teachers. And so they really have a good idea of if you want to convey information and you want to do it effectively, how can we do that? How can we teach teachers how to do that? And so we wanted to sort of create some science, hands-on, interactive learning experience for kids and tying it into sustainability, because we just saw that as a natural goal for us in terms of research and what we want to do in terms of education and outreach. And sort of the program and its component now brings all of those together. So that was sort of the conception and the people involved at the beginning. So Dr. Phil Crowley, who is a faculty member in the biology department, he's also the director of ERIC, which is short for the Ecological Research Center. And from the PIMSR group, Patty Works is sort of our education specialist, and she's been teaching in Lexington and Kentucky for probably 20 years. She's just amazing. You know, she's worked with elementary students and kids, and she just is really great at coming up with effective and fun ways to teach kids about things. When I talk about it, it sounds boring. When she talks about it, it's really exciting. So those were sort of the initial players, but the grad students actually in biology played a large role as well in picking the biological content that would be approached. And those two students are still here. So Rose Marks is a PhD candidate, mm-hmm. and Jim Schaefer is also a PhD candidate. And so every year we have slight kind of modifications, but they were really the initial start and drive to sort of push it forward.
Fantastic. So what has the biggest challenge been thus far in implementing this project? I'd like to sort of hear from both of you about the challenges in your individual roles.
Well, we've only really had one session so far, but I would say the biggest challenge for me is definitely probably getting the kids' attention and then mm-hmm. keeping that as we move forward, keeping them engaged and excited when we teach them. Which, I mean, it's pretty expected. It's pretty hard to keep any second grader's attention for longer periods of time. But I also think that we do a really good job of switching up the lesson plan, keeping it more exciting and interesting to these young kids. We use a lot of hands-on activities, different experiments and things. And you can see it's really working and keeping them really excited.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. There are different levels of challenges, I think, with the project as a whole. And I don't know, probably every week I might pick a different challenge that seems particularly challenging at that point in time. But, you know, it's the logistics are difficult for multiple reasons, because you're dealing with, because it is interactive and collaborative between people, that means that you're working with lots of different people's schedules and lots of different people's goals, and any sort of program like that is just a challenge to make it really work. But the good thing is that everyone is really interested in making it work, and so that makes it, you know, work. There are some other issues with timing, so when you have to work in these very short intervals of learning for the kids, so 15 and 20 minutes would be kind of a tops for an activity, and it goes by really fast with a lot of, yeah. you know, hyper at times second graders, and so it's, you don't want to feel like you're cramming too much in. And right now the way we have it structured is actually 2-hour sessions, there are 4 2-hour sessions over a 4-month period. Mm-hmm. But in second grade, you know, throughout, you have 50-minute periods. And so typically they're used to fitting things in within that period of time. And so that makes it a little bit tricky for scheduling as well. Some of these challenges have turned into sort of ideas for strategizing in the future to make the curriculum available more broadly if we're not there and after we leave. Mm-hmm. And that gets on to the other sort of challenge, which I think comes in with any program, is sustainability itself.
Right.
So, you know, sustainability in terms of funding the programs. I mean, the idea is that we provide some infrastructure based. So there's a seedling growth cart that gets given to the schools. And so they have that. They have raised beds, which are installed in the schools. And there's a few sort of odds and ends along the way. And then there's this curriculum and there's the training of actually how to implement the curriculum. And so the idea is that when you step away, it could be, would ideally be implemented. And I think the next step is you really making sure that that happens. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't, why doesn't that happen? So that's something, you know, that we're working with and we have some ideas on how to sort of streamline that as much as possible so that we can keep it going because that's what we want. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think.
So we are actually going to take a quick break, but we will be right back with more talk about the Sustainability in Garden Science Initiative. Keep it locked. Welcome back. It's now 4:17 and you're listening to Green Talks. I am joined by Megan Seifert and Drew Hardy. They are some UK students working on a Sustainability in Garden Science Initiative in some local elementary schools. So what is the timeline each year for the project? I know that you mentioned that it's been a three-year process, but what's within each program, I guess, the individual timeline?
Well, the way we've been implementing it, when we're actually in the schools doing sort of our teaching teams when they're there, there are four different sessions, mm-hmm. and they're 2 hours each. And for the past 3 years, and I think we'll probably continue to do this and I hope we do expand it to make it a year-long program possibly. But there are four sessions that are 2 hours each, and they're spaced about a month apart. Mm-hmm. So we start typically in January or late February, and then it runs through May because we want to start the seeds, you know, in the classroom on the seedling growth cart, and then we sort of transition them outside, and then it sort of culminates with this group harvest, and they essentially get to see the entirety of a life cycle, and they also get to understand sort of crop production, and we can touch on sort of local sustainability topics, you know, like eating local and things like that as well. So that's sort of the timeline for what actually happens in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, the summer and the fall will be sort of collating the information that we gather from pre and post tests. I mentioned before that we're collecting some data, mm-hmm. essentially what they knew at the beginning and what they know at the end. It's pretty straightforward. That was designed also with our education consultant. And so the summer and the fall will be sort of collating that data, presenting that data in potentially at a workshop or probably a regional seminar, and then ideally publication of those results.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of never ending, we hope, in the long term. But that's sort of the sections of how it works. Yeah.
Awesome. So how are the schools and the individual classrooms chosen to participate in the program?
Yeah, it's somewhat systematic. we specifically target, you know, Lexington schools, just mostly due to location and mm-hmm. feasibility of UK students being able to travel long distances regularly. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we try to target schools based on need. And that need might be infrastructure need, and it might be curricular needs. So if there's a new science lab instructor or a new teacher that is really interested in doing something but just has never done anything or hasn't done a lot of science-based education or plant education. And so we kind of ask around. And like I mentioned, the PIMSR group, which is next door, they do a lot of teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know a ton of people in the school system. And so we can sort of have conversations with people and sort of recognize need. And then from there, we see, you know, which schools and principals are on board. Because because it does take flexibility, we really want to make sure people have the time to dedicate to it, because it does take extra time for the teachers. And we do have some compensation built in during the summer, which was really great, because it does take a lot of extra time. And the idea is that in the future, they will gather sort of a infrastructure of parent support mm-hmm. to help maintain the garden. But it just takes a while to get that going.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what would both of your long-term visions be for this project?
Well, I would like to see it definitely expand in the future and continue in the future. And I'm hoping that we can be able to work with some more elementary schools, more than just two per year. But, you know, as she was saying before, just expanding it, getting more people involved, and just growing the program would be good to see.
Yeah. I'm glad you think we should do it every year with more schools. I hope you'll come back. I think we want to continue it. Of course we do. I'd like to see some extension of this, so more of a follow-up, so that mm-hmm. it does get integrated somewhat more formally in the curriculum. So maybe the goal is that every second grade in Lexington or Fayette would implement this curriculum, or at least have access to it. And then we would sort of work through and try to go to each one of those schools, at least one, and have follow-up for it, and have data showing, you know, learning over the time. And we can sort of adapt and percolate that curriculum. And then essentially every second grader would be the goal, has taken sort of this and got this introduction to sustainability and garden science, and all schools have some form of infrastructure. And so I think that's a big long-term goal. And another is thinking about ways in which it can expand and tie in with other efforts that are going on at the Fayette County Public School level, that are going on at local nonprofits, that are trying to do education as well. Because I think, at least for the purpose of sustainability education, there's so many things about sustainability. There's lots of different topics and big areas around it, social, economic, and environmental. And so you really need all those people mm-hmm. to be involved. And so I think if it could start a larger conversation of how can teachers touch on or discuss sustainability across the humanities and the sciences mm-hmm. throughout school, I think it would, you know, it makes it a more cohesive and robust learning experience for the students and the teachers. So that's the vision.
So I would love to continue on about that and sort of touch on how the SGS project sort of handles the three spheres of sustainability, being social, economic, and environmental well-being.
Mm-hmm. So I think from the environmental point of view, I think that's fairly clear, because we talk a lot about, you know, plant health, and then more broadly sort of system health. Mm-hmm. And we get to sort of interdependence of plants and what they're getting from the soil and things like that. And in terms of social and economic, I think that it always ends up that we end up at a school where there is a lot of need. So Cardinal Valley is one of those schools. So they're a Title I school, which means that you get, I believe it's federal funding or financial assistance, because a large number or percentage of the families are low income. Mm-hmm. And so additional support so that students can meet the like fairly robust assessments and standards that they have to, it's just very difficult. And so I think that within that scope, that's sort of how we are addressing that sort of social need and equity base, so that we provide infrastructure so that this education is available to all independent of need, because the school system doesn't have a lot of money anyways, but mm-hmm. particularly in areas where it's primarily low-income families, there's just less time for parents to donate their time to programs like this. And so so that's that aspect. And in terms of economic, I think it ties in probably with the food production aspect and how you can make food and resources available in a relatively low cost and low environmental impact way. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really ties those together sort of throughout the program.
Absolutely. That's really awesome because, I mean, I personally, I don't think I heard the word sustainability until high school. And so the fact that, and when I did, it was really framed just in the environmental lens. And so I think that introducing all of those spheres to these second graders at such a young age is something really valuable for them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's not surprising that you didn't hear the word sustainability until then, because I think really that word didn't, I was reading about this the other day. So like 25 years ago mm-hmm. is really the introduction of it. And it's just sort of seeped in some sort of exponential way. And, mm-hmm. And now you hear about a lot, but there's a lot of different meanings depending on who you talk to or you read about it. And like you said, there are these sort of three spheres, and it's important to keep all of those in the conversation. So, just sort of familiarizing people, I think, early on is an important step in that.
Absolutely. So that's actually all I have for you guys, but I would like to give you an opportunity to sort of plug any ways to get involved or to get more information, if you have any of those.
Yeah. I think I mentioned the Ecological Research and Education Center, mm-hmm. and part of what I do, I'm actually not a PhD candidate. I finished that. Thankfully, that is totally fine. You don't have to call me doctor, but just don't tell me I have to, do my defense again. And so I'm a postdoc in the biology department, but part of what I do is outreach and community engagement and different programs like this. So some are K-12 education based, other are sort of citizen science and just community programs. Mm-hmm. And so if anyone is ever interested in those type of programs or being involved in something like this sustainability and garden science program, they can find more information on our website. So if you just type in UK Ecological Research and Education Center, that'll take you to our website and you can find my contact information there and some information on the programs.
Fantastic. Well, thank you guys both so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And this project
thanks for having us.
Yeah,
really
thank
great.
You.
So
thank
thanks
you.
For discussing. Yeah. So just for some final announcements, the applications for the 2017-2018 round of sustainability internships are open. You can find those at uky.edu/sustainability/student-internships. And as always, any member of the University of Kentucky community can submit a proposal to the Student Sustainability Council to receive funding support from the Environmental Stewardship Fee. All SSC meetings are open to the public and are announced on our website. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at UKYSSC. The Earth Days and the Bluegrass calendar is also up on UK Sustainability's website. That is uky.edu/sustainability/EDBG. And that collects a variety of community events encompassing workshops, volunteer opportunities, and even film screenings relating to sustainability all throughout the month of April. I'll be around next week for another installment of Green Talks. Thanks for listening and keep it locked.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.